Farid stepped up to the door and rested his forehead on it. "Friend, we're not with the Taliban," he said in a low, cautious voice. "The man who is with me wants to take this boy to a safe place." "I come from Peshawar," I said. "A good friend of mine knows an American couple there who run a charity home for children." I felt the man's presence on the other side of the door. I sensed him standing there, listening, hesitating, caught between suspicion and hope. "Look, I knew Sohrab's father," I said. "His name was Hassan. His mother's name was Farzana. He called his grandmother Sasa. He knows how to read and write, and he's good with the slingshot. There's hope for this boy, Aga, a way out. Please open the door." From the other side, only silence. "I'm his half-uncle," I said. A moment passed. Then a key rattled in the lock. The man's narrow face reappeared in the crack. He looked from me to Farid and back. "You were wrong about one thing," he said. "What?" "He's great with the slingshot." I smiled. "He's inseparable from that thing," he said. "He tucks it in the waist of his pants everywhere he goes." The man who let us in introduced himself as Zaman, the director of the orphanage. "I'll take you to my office," he said. We followed him through dim, grimy hallways where barefoot children dressed in frayed sweaters ambled around. We walked past rooms with no floor covering but matted carpets and windows shuttered with sheets of plastic. Skeleton frames of steel beds, most with no mattress, filled the rooms. "How many orphans live here?" Farid said. "More than we have room for, about 250, Zaman said over his shoulder. "But they're not all yatim. Many of them have lost their fathers in the war, and their mothers can't feed them because the Taliban don't allow them to work. So they bring their children here." He made a sweeping gesture with his hand and added ruefully, "This place is better than the street, but not that much better." This building was never meant to be lived in. It used to be a storage warehouse for a carpet manufacturer. So there's no water heater, and they've let the well go dry. He dropped his voice. "I've asked the Taliban for money to dig a new well more times than I remember, and they just twirl their rosaries and tell me there's no money." "No money," he snickered. He pointed to a row of beds along the wall. "We don't have enough beds and not enough mattresses for the beds we do have. Worse, we don't have enough blankets." He showed us a little girl skipping rope with two other kids. "You see that girl? This past winter, the children had to share blankets. Her brother died of exposure." He walked on. "The last time I checked, we have less than a month's supply of rice left in the warehouse, and when that runs out, the children will have to eat bread and tea for breakfast and dinner." I noticed he made no mention of lunch. He stopped and turned to me. "There is very little shelter here, almost no food, no clothes, and no clean water. What I have in ample supply here is children who have lost their childhood. But the tragedy is that these are the lucky ones. We're filled beyond capacity, and every day I turn away mothers who bring their children." He took a step toward me. "You say there is hope for Sohrab? I pray you don't lie, Aga. But you may well be too late." "What do you mean?" I said. Zaman's eyes shifted. "Follow me."